Hi, folks. Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast, mwire.com. You can reach us that way. You can send us a Facebook Messenger message on Mountain West Wire Facebook. I never promoted that before, Matt, but you can. You can send us a message on Facebook if you want, right?
Yeah, you can tell us how amazing we are, or you can give us 5 stars on your podcasting platform of choice and praise us there.
That's true. You can also do 5 stars on Facebook page. We have a couple. Twitter, MWC Wire. I put a post. I'll monitor this during the show. We're doing this Thursday morning. I don't know if you saw the tweet I posted. I'm like, can we get to 2,200 followers within an hour?
Fingers crossed.
Granted, we were like 10 away. We are currently 6 away right now. So thank you for those people in the last few minutes who have liked our page and retweeted. And yeah, you know what's funny about Twitter?
What's that?
There's a particular Wyoming fan who follows us but doesn't care for us at all. Mm-hmm. You probably see who that is.
Yes.
Why do you follow us? Because I replied in a comment because one of our Boise guys is like something about their power rankings and Wyoming's near the bottom because they haven't been playing all that great. And the response is, because I guess you take what you can get, where at least we didn't get beat up by some other school. It's like, well, Oklahoma State was ranked. It was a road game. They're pretty good. And you beat Wolford by 3 points, so. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, even though Wyoming's not playing this week, I think the overall picture of the Cowboys right now is that they're just a little bit uneven. And I think the way that things have progressed in the first few weeks is that it's basically like, you know, the defense carrying the offense, which we all, I think, kind of mm-hmm. anticipated a little bit. Like, they've had above average field position relative to the national average. They've been decent at finishing scoring opportunities. They're 56th in that category. But then when you go by the 5 factors over a football study hall, you look at efficiency and explosiveness, and they're 106th and 118th respectively.
Yeah,
and that was if they can't drag that number up in conference play, rather, then, you know, they're going to have a hard time winning games consistently. The defense is going to give them a chance, but the offense could, you know, it could drag them out of some games they might otherwise win.
That's my point. I'm like, come on, your defense is amazing. Score some points. It's just funny when, like, look who's chiming in. I'm like, well, you follow us, and we were in a post you replied to, and so. But still, you're right. Like, it's just kind of odd when I, like, do you follow people you hate on Twitter or don't care for?
No. No, I don't. There's not enough time in my life to do that.
I may search out certain things if I know they tweet dumb stuff just because. Every now and then, like maybe once a week, just to.
Like every time someone tries to claim UCF's the national champion.
I don't search that deep.
I do that.
But typically, I will see it because it's a retweet from somebody else. I'll see it that way. I'm like, oh, okay, that guy. Let's see what else they're up to.
Anytime the American puts out a statement about how great they are.
And I love Chris Vanini, but come on, man.
Context is everything.
Talk about the whole group of five stuff. You do a good job with the Athletic. I've worked with him. I know him a little bit. Like, I know he just retweeted per the release, but see, that's the problem too. We can get in this as well since we have a few games this week, so we can banter. And this goes back to Media Day where the question was asked, so how should we promote the league? Crickets, crickets, crickets. Bob Davey stumbles over an answer and recovers to okay. mm-hmm. It's like, come on, folks. Since we mentioned bye week teams, we should mention who's on a bye. Let's see if I can get this right because Wyoming is on a bye, I'm pretty sure, correct?
Yes.
Fresno State's on a bye.
Yes.
Boise State's on a bye.
Yes.
San Jose State's on a bye.
Mm-hmm.
Utah State plays? No, not a bye. And who am I missing? Is that everybody?
You are missing New Mexico.
Sorry, it was Bob Davies. The fight in Bob Davies, which they need a week off to see if Tuviato is healthy to play when they suit up for the next game, so.
Exactly.
Let's just get to the games itself. We'll have some Boise, because we have a lot of extra Boise writers this year, which is awesome. Appreciate that. We'll have some bye week stuff Thursday or Friday, so look out for that. But Nevada-Toledo, first game of the day. 9 a.m. Pacific, so dang. Wolfpack fans, I guess early breakfast, or I don't know. That's their second 9 Pacific game. How are you going to be prepared for that 9 a.m. Pacific game, Matt? You up and going?
I'm basically out of bed. Every morning I work on Saturdays, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I'm out of bed at like 6 in the morning every day anyway, so it's not a big deal.
You are up fairly early most of the time.
Yeah.
I used to be. Now I try to sleep in maybe till 7:30, but it's better than 5:30 when I used to have to wake up every day. But
I miss those days.
7:30. I know what you mean when I was doing 5:15, 5:30. But this is Nevada at Toledo. It's at the Glass Bowl, which is a great stadium name. 10.5-point favorite for the Rockets there.
CBS Sports Network.
That's right, CBS Sports Network or Fubo Free Trial. That'll be on our How to Watch post. So if you want to change your email every week like I do, go for it. That's fine. They don't check, apparently. Mm-hmm. So my delay of stalling from actually paying for it is going to possibly go in perpetuity. We'll see. So what Nevada team's going to show up, Matt? Because they've the competition they've played, because we got to give credit, obviously, to Vanderbilt, who's nearly beat Notre Dame, and they're actually better than they typically have been with Derek Mason. They're not the 4-4 win team. They're actually pretty good. Oregon State's a dumpster, and they beat them, held off a rally, 37-35. I think Nevada's in trouble in this game because Toledo, you know who the Rockets are. They actually have a really good offense. They pass a lot. They don't have Logan Woodside, but it doesn't seem to matter. They're still 2-1, or 1-1. They lost to Miami last week, which some people are hoping for an upset, but this is going to feature a lot of points.
Probably. Probably. I mean, we talked about Wyoming a minute ago and what kind of team they've been in 3 weeks. I think you could say that Nevada's been basically the opposite of that, where the offense has really led the defense so far. You know, as far as the defense is concerned, you know, I think it's a plus that they've been able to create turnovers. You know, they're at zero in the turnover margin on the year, but I think it does help that they have 6 interceptions. And even though they haven't recovered any fumbles yet, you know, obviously they've been forcing them. So they've been creating opportunities for themselves that they weren't always doing last year. But we talk about explosiveness, you know, which is basically just the ability to create a big play, you know, 15 yards or more. Mm-hmm. On offense, they're 19th after 3 games. That's pretty good. And on defense, they're 109th, which is not so good.
Nah, it's out of 130, so.
So going back to your original point about there being probably lots of points in this game, yeah.
Well, the over-under, I had it here. It is, because the line's 10.5. Over-under is set at 67.5. That's a lot
that
of
seems
points.
That seems a touch low.
You think it's low?
I think so.
Well, Toledo's played VMI where they scored 66, 24 versus an OK Miami team. But it looks like they have no defense either. So maybe you're right. Maybe so. What would be your tipping point? 75.
Probably. Yeah.
Because the predictions, we'll get to the actual what I do. My typical, hey, number fire says this, team ranking says this. They are all at about actually slightly below that number, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. But I guess when the over under set at 67.5. That's what you do. I am wondering. I want to see Nevada's offense because they haven't actually had like that huge game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they played Portland State week one, but that doesn't really count. I want to see what they did last year, like when they were playing Colorado State, Air Force, when they were putting up 40-something points. Didn't they nearly beat Utah State last year? Was that one of those games as well where they kind of just had to? It was a shootout, I believe.
I don't have last year's schedule in front of me. I don't remember.
Sorry, apologies. No, it was CSU. Hawaii was sort of at 35-21, so they did not play the Aggies. But I want to see one of those games. Maybe not defensively, but I want to see them have Ty Ganji go for like 350 yards in a game.
Well, I think what this game is going to come down to ultimately is which wide receiver unit does more for their quarterback. Because, you know, on the one hand, you look at Nevada, for instance. They're going to be without Brendan O'Leary Orange. He's still recovering from that scary injury he had last week against Oregon State. But the nice thing if you're a Nevada fan is, you know, it's not a problem. You just plug one or two more young guys in there. And, you know, I think this is maybe a good opportunity to talk about some of those guys who have really stepped up in these first few weeks. Because obviously we know McLean Mannix gets the majority of the headlines and for good reason. Like, he's number one on the team in targets. But Caleb Fossum has been pretty solid so far this year. 13 catches, 200 yards. And between the two of them, if you look at their stat profile that Bill Connolly put out there, the difficulty level is pretty high because Mannix's yards per target is over 11, and so is Fossum's. And, you know, even if O'Leary's not in the starting lineup, they have another freshman, Romeo Daubs, who's caught two passes and averaged about 15 yards, 16 yards in the last couple weeks against Vanderbilt and Oregon State. So losing a playmaker like O'Leary Orange may not be as big a deal as it would be otherwise. But then you look at Toledo's wide receiver unit, and this is one of the best units in the group five, period.
Typically every year they are almost.
Yeah, because, and not only because, you know, that's something that the program's been well known for, but this is maybe like the most experienced wide receiver unit in any of any group of five team. And it all starts with the big threesome of Deontay Johnson, John Bay Johnson, and Cody Thompson.
Johnson, Thompson, your local law firm in Toledo. Go check him out.
Yeah, and all three of those guys, we talk about yards per target. You know, Deontay Johnson's yards per target right now is almost 18. So they're kind of breaking things open. Their yards per catch are 22.4, 24.5, 17.4. And maybe some of that is skewed a little bit because of their blowout win against BMI. But the guys in that Wolfpack defensive backfield, Jawan Dotson, Daniel Brown, Perdale Robbins and company, those guys are going to need to be ready because this might be the best unit they face all year long. And that includes Fresno State and Hawaii.
Yeah, well, really quick, Deontay Johnson, 6 for 119, 2 touchdowns versus Miami. So he was had a pretty big game. I'm trying to see who else. The other guys didn't do all that great, but he showed up in that Miami game. So that's VMI to skew it, but doing what he did versus the Canes, that's a pretty big deal for Deontay. So this will be like this unit. They're not to say that they're always good, but they're good in group of five. They're probably one of the better groups beyond that in the country just because, yes, it's part of the offense. Like end of the year, Cole McDonald, Hawaii, he'll be probably have one of the most yards in the country because of what the offense they play. But that's a one-year fluke at the moment. Toledo always has these guys, and do we trust the Nevada secondary? I know they got Damian Baber, but he hasn't really been amazing in a year or two. Since a freshman year has been okay, Nevada's defense is always suspect. And so maybe you're right. Maybe it should be 75 over-under, and it'd be like a 45-40 game or something, or 40-35.
But the nice thing, if you're a Nevada fan, is also that Toledo's defense, their own pass defense is, it's okay. It's not great. And they did get picked apart a little bit by Miami last weekend. You know, they do have a couple playmakers on their defense. You know, Jamal Hines, the defensive end freshman. You know, he's got 2.5 tackles for loss and a sack. They haven't really been that disruptive now that I'm looking at their Havoc stats. As a team, they only rank 101st in the country. So if they can give Ganji time to throw, which that's another credit to the Nevada offense, they've been able to do that more often than not in the early going. His sack rate right now is only about 4%, which is a net positive. So if they give him time to throw and the receivers can get open, Nevada's definitely going to have a chance in this game.
They are, but like I said earlier, I want to see them actually have a big output against the an actual FBS team.
Yeah.
And when you look what you said, Miami, what they did against Toledo, I think the 10.5 is too much because I think it'll come down to what defense plays better. Because I think both teams will score points. Even the team that loses will probably still have maybe 28 points minimum, I'm thinking. So it's going to come down to, can Malik Reed or somebody in the Nevada defense make a stop? Or does Toledo get a turnover or do something on defense to stop the Nevada offense? Because this could be like drive for drive, point for point the whole game. I think it's going to come down to what defense makes a play, whether it's a turnover or short field or even a defensive score. I think that's what's going to be the difference in this matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to your point about do you trust this Nevada secondary?
No.
I mean, I think the most accurate answer, the most accurate answer is yes and no, because if you look at the splits, for instance, between the first half and the second half of this year, you're talking about some pretty significant differences. Like the completion percentage for opponents in the first half against Nevada, 63.8. In the second half, that drops 11 points to 52.7.
Can I counter when you're losing by so many points, you're just going to run the ball?
I mean, I think that that's a fair point, but the attempts, the split in attempts is not so wide that I think it's insignificant. You know, the overall passer rating drops by about 40 points, mm-hmm. and they've just been tougher in the second half of games. So I think what this is ultimately going to come down to, because I do think Toledo's definitely going to lead with the pass, is the secondary is just going to have to win a couple of those early drives to give the offense a chance to get out in front.
You know, one issue is they have 10, if I'm reading this correctly, here's an issue too. They give it too many deep plays, 10 plays of 25 plus or more yards.
Yeah.
In the air, 22, 15 or more. That's not like San Jose State or Hawaii bad or even CSU, but it's pretty poor. This can't give up big plays. That's going to be, if they could somehow keep stuff underneath, 10-yard, you know, I mean, just reasonable. They're going to have big plays occasionally, but 25, they have what, 20, what did I say, 20 of those? Is that right? Or no, excuse me, where did I go here? Sorry, I'm shuffling my figure 10. That's more than three a game. They need to have like one at most. You know what I mean? It's like you can't give those deep plays. So they can keep stuff underneath, and that's kind of what they have to do. Toledo's known for big plays. Like, they throw the ball downfield. That's what they want to do.
Oh, yeah.
But again, like you mentioned, having the slow start defensively, maybe mix up the defensive play calling, do something a bit different to maybe get a pass rush or pick something that'll help out. Either get a pass rush or maybe if you have to, add another DB for a little bit just to see, like a nickel a little bit more often. Because Toledo's going to run out 3 to 4 wide receivers more often than not, so they may have to have that extra DB anyways, maybe if they have the depth to do it, which not always the case, but something needs to be done early on to not allow teams to complete, like, 64% of their passes in the first half?
Yeah,
64.
But that's the thing, though. It's not like the pass rush has been non-existent for this team. If you look at Nevada's havoc rate compared to Toledo's, as a team, they're nearly in the top 40. And it's not just guys like Malik Reed who are getting it done. You know, they have multiple guys who have at least one or two sacks so far. And, you know, someone like Burdale Robbins, for instance, even though he only has one interception so far, he has 5 pass breakups. So, again, it comes down to not only continuing to create opportunities for themselves, but, you know, maybe a little bit of luck that they just haven't had so far. Because, like I said, they forced fumbles, but they're 0-for this year. And if they can turn that around, you know, that's the kind of thing where, you know, basically everything up to recovering a fumble is a skill. And if you ever read Football Outsiders Almanac, you know that already.
Well,
but that's something
also
to pay attention to.
Here's the thing. You know, the shape of football is not round. It's oblong.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why it's hard to get those. Have you seen Nevada has a turnover towel? Is that a thing?
That is a new thing, yes.
Does everybody have a thing?
Everybody's going to have a thing if they don't have one already.
What if you don't have a thing? Shouldn't that be the new thing?
I just want to know who's going to buck the trend and get like an offensive thing. Like when you score a touchdown, you get to go like sit on a, I don't know.
A touchdown something. We'll think.
A touchdown beanbag or something.
That's exactly what you need.
Just go jump onto it.
It's like the, you know, some stadiums have like the best seat in the house, which really isn't the best seat in the house.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the recliner in the end zone. It's like, I can't see anything. What are you doing?
The touchdown bouncy castle.
There you go. Something like that where you score a touchdown and just kind of go hang out in the corner. Like you catch a fade route, you're in bounds, you just fall right in the beanbag in the corner.
If you see it on television in 2 or 3 weeks, you know you heard it here first.
Hey, send us a check, Team A, whichever does it first. So I just happened to look over at the Reno Gazette. I'm like, oh, turnover towels. All right. So what's your prediction? It's Nevada minus 10 or plus, excuse me, Toledo minus 10.5 on the road. What are you doing? Have you made your official picks yet on our spreadsheet?
I'm making them as we go. I like Nevada to cover the 10.5. And I ultimately think this is going to be a track meet, but I think Toledo is going to be able to do enough to pull it out. There's going to be a lot of points in this game. So I'd say take the over, take Nevada and the points. But if you're going straight up, I have Toledo 42-38.
I think Toledo as well. I had the same thing with you. Nevada will cover, but I think it'll be like 42-35.
This is low-key going to be one of the most fun games of September.
It's going to be one of the best and of the week. Just saying, exactly. Like, how many games are at 10 a.m., my time zone, the noon Eastern block, 9 Pacific, that's good. Typically, it's a stupid Big Ten game. I guess, technically, is the, I was thinking Texas OU. Speaking of that, did you see FS1's having a two-hour pregame for Texas-Oklahoma?
Nobody asked for that.
Not even Texas fans asked for that.
By the way, S&P Plus has this game at Toledo 44, Nevada 26. So I think we both think it's going to be a little closer than that.
Okay. There's going to be some competition just really quick for Saturday morning. Notre Dame at Wake Forest is at 9 a.m. Pacific kick. That could be some interest, possibly. Nebraska's terrible at Michigan. Those are two named teams, but Nebraska's awful. And it's a ranked team. So there's a couple games. I'll bet good money Toledo, Nevada will rival either of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I guess, Georgia, Missouri, but Missouri's, yeah, they're 3-0, I guess, so there's something. But there's a couple games, but we'll keep our eye on Nevada, Toledo over on CBS. So next game, FCS action, Illinois State at Colorado State, 1 p.m. Mountain Time, AT&T Sportsnet, I believe, is the channel it's on, so check that out. Let me ask you this, Matt. How many under-center plays or how many snaps or passes will Colin Hill get? Is he going to get, like, too many snaps again?
I guess I should say off the bat that he is going to get some snaps. If you're forcing me to choose a number, I'm going to say somewhere between 12 and 15. But I'm also really hoping that it's not going to matter because Colorado State comes out and plays with a vengeance.
They should. They're playing like Illinois State. They're in the Missouri Valley. They play, as you mentioned, they play with, or before they played North Dakota State, that conference. And how good are they? You chatted with the guy for a little bit. What did they have to say kind of about who this FCS, the Redbirds are? Because isn't also a Stanford coaching there? Or is that Indiana State?
I think that's Indiana State. I'm not sure.
All right, so...
But, I mean, ISU's been... They've been fine so far. They've only played two games. One of them was a blowout win against St. Xavier, which I think is like NAIA or something like that.
Sheesh.
But they also had a big win last week against Eastern Illinois, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So the offense does have some nice pieces. You know, the one guy I think you're going to want to watch out for if you're a Colorado State fan is Spencer Schnell. He's been their number one target. He can kind of take the top off the defense if you're not careful. And his numbers are skewed a little bit because he does have a 97-yard passing or receiving touchdown this year. But he's still averaging over 16 yards a catch. And their top three guys, Schnell, Braxton Haley, and Andrew Edgar, are all averaging over 15 yards per catch. But I don't know if the defense is going to be able to keep up with that because, you know, they have a couple playmakers. You know, Zachary Matthews, for instance, has three tackles for loss and a sack. But if you look at the two deep, like I have, you'll see that there's a lot of young pieces on both sides of the ball. And that's the kind of thing where with all of the offensive talent, especially that Colorado State has, this should be another big game for Carter Samuels and Preston Williams. And, you know, fingers crossed, it's the kind of game where they can put forth those big performances without necessarily being under the gun for 60 minutes or playing from behind for 60 minutes.
That's a good point. So what I want to see for the Rams on this, because they should, we're both going to say they're going to win. They should win, right? That's the
case.
I want to see, you say Carter Samuels, big game. I want to see the running backs have something big. AC Matthews, Marvin Kinsey, whoever they put out there, have a huge game running them. Because they haven't done that this year. That's been one of the things where we all say they have the depth. It seems like they do, but the running game hasn't been overly impressive. Part of it is when you're down big to Arkansas, when you're down big to Hawaii, when you're down big and can't move the ball versus Colorado, you're losing, you have to pass. This is a game where I want to see them just run the ball and run it well. I don't think that's too much to ask for, and they should make that emphasis in this game, like figure out the running game and get things going.
I would definitely agree with that.
Is there anything else we need to mention? Because this is an FCS game. We've already spent 4 minutes on it.
I mean, to kind of emphasize your point, it's worth noting that KJ Carter-Samuels right now, it's skewed because of the fact that they played four games, but the only quarterback in the FBS who has more pass attempts so far is Gardner Minshew, actually. Ah. Donald is third.
Okay. Minshew of, he's Washington.
Wazoo.
Wazoo, that's right. I'm like, not East Carolina, that's where he's at before. So, all right, so do you think the Rams will win big, I'm assuming?
I'm thinking they're going to win pretty comfortably.
All right, one real last quick note. One headline I saw the Colorado, which is never what you want to see. Few signals point to Colorado State turning their season around.
Oh.
That's not what you want to see. So, yeah. All right, next game. Let's move on here. UNLV Arkansas State. This will be a sneaky good game.
I definitely agree.
I'm glad it's not on – well, it could have been on ESPN Plus, but it's on ESPN3, so you still need a subscription or password to some TV provider. Or, again, free trial on Fubo, because ESPN comes with it. Just saying. UNLV at Arkansas State, Sun Belt. It's a 4 p.m. Pacific kickoff. interesting afternoon evening game. Did you know? You probably do know because you spoke with our buddy Jeremy Harper. Is that Arkansas State has won or shared 5 of the past 7 Sun Belt titles?
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are, and they beat Utah State a couple years ago. Didn't they almost beat Boise State recently?
I don't think so.
Or they played each other recently. I'll go with that, right? Because
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember that off the top of my head.
That's where Brian Harsin was the head coach previously. Here's the thing. Their offense is good. So disregard that 57-7 loss to Alabama because they'll do that against 98% of the teams in the country this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to try to gauge UNLV's chances, like you don't look at the Alabama game. You look at the Tulsa game where they were a lot more balanced. And, you know, even though Tulsa, according to Jeremy, really made Harper try to beat them with his arm, you know, on the whole, he's having a pretty good year. Like his numbers are slightly down from where they were on the whole season a year ago, but he's still completing 58% of his passes. He still has, you know, a trio of pretty good receivers led by Justin McInnes. He's their number one guy. He's averaging around 11 yards per catch. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, and I think this is ultimately what the game is going to come down to, is they've got a stable of running backs that are just as deep and probably as talented as UNLV's own. You know, he mentioned, our guy Jeremy mentioned Warren Wand, for instance, 5'5", 184, but he's kind of their lead back, and he's averaging 4.8 yards per carry, and so is Marcel Murray, and so is Armand Wewe, and so is Hansen himself. They're all averaging at least 4.8 yards per carry. So this is a dangerous running game that, you know, when I'm thinking about UNLV's defensive line being pushed around a little bit when it comes to, you know, the ground game, you know, if they can't get off the field, it's going to be a really interesting game because I think both of these teams are going to be able to assert themselves on the ground.
And they're kind of, not to say they're similar with each other, but they sort of are because, like you mentioned, Hansen can run the ball, Rodgers can run. The deep running back group, you mentioned three guys plus a QB, Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams, and receiving core, they have two main guys, but then again, like Omar Bayless, number three guy, is averaging 20 yards a catch.
Mm-hmm.
I know one's a 54-yarder, but look how many deep balls they have. So this could test the secondary as well. They have four passes of at least 36, 35-plus yards. They have a 250-yarder, a 60-plus yarder. These guys, they want to throw the deep ball, and that's what you do when you have a good running game. Let's just run the ball, suck in the defense, play action, and go over the top.
Well, the big difference between these two teams, though,
what's that?
Is like we know Arkansas State has playmakers on their defensive line.
That's true.
Because right now, as a unit, they rank fourth nationally in havoc rate. And it all starts with, you know, big guys up front. Forrest Merrill, 4 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks. Kevin Thurman, 3.5 tackles for loss. You know, those guys in the middle, and even Dejon Emery, for instance, on the end, he has 3.5 tackles for loss and 2 sacks. So they've got talent up there, and they might be able to disrupt the UNLV running game in a way that we didn't see it too often last year. But, you know, Fresno State was able to do it. San Diego State was able to do it. You know, good defensive lines can shut this UNLV team down if they're not careful.
I think so. And then looking real quick over at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, they have a piece out over by Mark Anderson basically saying they need to get more pressure on the quarterbacks.
Yes.
And so it looks like they're going to try to do a scheme to probably adjust a little bit because they say the pass rush has improved. Okay, coach speak, whatever. Guys are getting older. They're getting better, Sanchez said the other day. And so it looks like they want to just be more aggressive, and maybe it takes a couple games to get to that point. It's not going to be perfect week one or week two. It maybe take a couple weeks to get in the groove to know exactly what you want to do and how well you can do it. And if that shows up, maybe that'll be a thing. Because remember, versus USC, I know USC isn't great this year. They made a decent amount of stops on third down because USC wasn't able to move the ball all that great. It took a late second half surge to make the game look a bigger blowout than what it was. And then versus UTEP, UTEP's not very good, but their defense made a few plays. So this is a team where this is probably like one of the most even teams they'll play all year because the 7.5-point line I think is a bit too much for this game because I think UNLV's beyond that. There's nothing that gets Arkansas State clearly, but I say these teams are pretty – like when they finish the season, Arkansas State probably will have more wins. These two teams line up, they match up well with each other, and they're basically the same skill level in my opinion overall. Like when you – There's edges here and there, but I would just say this is going to be a much closer to that 7-point line right now.
Here's the thing I think is going to make the biggest difference in this game, and it might seem totally obvious, but is Armani
points.
Rogers
going who's going to score more points?
Is Armani Rogers? Well, yeah.
Sorry,
is Rogers going to crack 50%?
What is he at
because
right now? What is
right
he?
Now he's at 47.5.
That's not good.
You know, to his credit, he's been a little bit better about, you know, creating explosive plays. Like, he's averaging 12 yards completion. That's still pretty good.
And only one pick, too. So.
And only one pick. But his sack rate is still pretty high. It's right around 11.5% right now. So that could improve a little bit. And while, yeah, you can make the argument he's done a lot with his legs, he's averaging nearly a first down every time he tries to carry the ball after you adjust for sacks and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to need to create that big play through the air. And, you know, I still believe in the talent they have at wide receiver. We just haven't really seen them create those big passing plays consistently. Like, we saw it a couple times against USC. Maybe not so much in the last couple weeks against Prairie View and UTEP.
Well,
UTEP,
they ran the ball. He only threw 13 times. And so that's part of it, too. Like, and then Prairie View, yeah, I'd have liked him not to go 11 of 21, maybe 16 of 21. So you're right, though. He's still, even though we've seen it, he hasn't done it this year. Going against USC, okay, 40%, 44 is not great by any means. But again, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's running the ball well. They need to either protect him, or maybe he's taking too long to find the guy inside to run. Or not taking too long, but not waiting long enough and taking off for a run if one of his receivers or his number one guy is not open. Maybe he needs to be more patient. Look, okay, 1, 2, 3, go back to number one, go back to number two if he has the time to make those plays. So I think this is a game where he'll have enough pass attempts so we'll kind of know more of what he is in the year two as a starter.
Yeah, here's what I think one of the most telling stats that I think backs up why I think Rodgers throwing the ball is so important is if you look at the revamped stat profiles, one of the things that jumped out to me was how they've done on third down so far. And they've only faced third and short, which I believe is defined as 4 yards or less, on 7% of their plays. And what stands out to me is that they have converted every single third and short that they've had this year.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But when you compare that to third and long, they're 114th in the country as far as the number of third and longs they've had to face. Hmm. And their success rate is only 20%. So they've only converted 1 in 5 third and longs. And my thinking is that Arkansas State's going to be able to force them into more of those situations than they've been accustomed to in the past couple weeks. And that's why I think Rodgers is going to need to create plays through the air in order to overcome that.
So who do you think is going to win then?
I think this is another game where there's probably going to be a lot of points. But honestly, I kind of feel the same way about UNLV that I do about Nevada. I think Arkansas State has enough players on their defense where, you know, they're going to give up big plays here and there. But I do think they have enough on their offense to be able to kind of hold them off. So I like UNLV to cover, but I do like Arkansas State to win straight up. So I'm going to say 35-30.
35-30. All right, what did our buddy Jeremy Harper over at College Football News or Sunbelt Heat say?
I don't have that in front of me.
Oh, sorry. You know what I'm doing with? I'm going straight up UNLV.
All right.
They're going to win outright. It'll be close, though. It'll be, because over-under is still 66.5. It's going to be like, that's a tough number. But I think it's going to be like, I'm going to go 35-30.
All right.
I know it's on the road. They haven't done well, but I think UNLV's taking the turn. And that this will be a game where it'll be another sneaky good game because Sunbelt, like South Alabama does some weird stuff. Troy does some weird stuff to get some good wins. So I'm going Rebels to win because I believe in them, I guess.
Yeah, S&P Plus, by the way, has it Arkansas State 34, UNLV 31.
See, I'm going to tell you.
So it's about as good as a toss-up.
Toss-up. And real quick, I need my pick center picture. Hold on, let me go back to game center here. 36-29 for team rankings. Number fire, they say 41.6 to 28.3.
Interesting.
I'm not buying that one.
All right.
All right, next game. What do we got next year?
We have Air Force at Utah State.
Game of the week?
Maybe, yeah.
what other nominees do you have?
I mean, I think they're all good games in their own right.
They are. Being very diplomatic there. I see what you're doing.
Yeah,
But you're not
I try to be.
wrong either. There's some other good games. I'll give the edge because, hey, it's a conference game. And I want to see what Utah State can do.
We should probably mention it's at 8:15 Mountain Time, 7:15 Pacific on ESPN2.
Actually 8:30.
It is 8:30.
Which
Oh, okay,
means
it said it...
means 8:47.
Okay, yeah, that works.
So Utah State Air Force. Utah State is 2-1, a mere 6 points from being probably ranked 22nd in the country and undefeated.
And they are 10.5 point favorites.
They are scoring at will against anybody. I don't care if they play Tennessee Tech. He scores 73 points. 60 points versus New Mexico State. A solid 31 against Michigan State on the road. Air Force, on the other hand, is 1-1. They have beaten only what the Stony Brook, right? 38-0.
That's right.
Sorry, I think I'm like it's FCS team. I know who it is. FAU. They played close. One note, Air Force looks to have a new running back or a new starting running back. Or how do we phrase that? Cade Remsburg is the top of the depth chart. That's the best way to put it, right?
Yeah, tailback, right?
Yes, tailback. It could be a fullback, you never know. Fullback could lead this team in rushing, right? It's happened
Really,
before.
because the depth chart I'm looking at still has Joseph Sauce here at the top.
Is it an old depth chart? Because
I have no idea. There's no date on
they
it. Who even
repurpose the same
knows?
one. Obviously reading over what Brett Brigham in, he says Air Force sophomore Cade Remsburg runs the front of the tailback competition,
Well, there you go.
so it's going to be a multiple which is no, which shouldn't surprise anybody. If they could list four guys at or and any four of those could lead the team in rushing at the
That's
depth chart.
probably true.
And
Yeah.
so and or it could be that sneaky fullback who has 3 for 95 because the fullback dive one time goes for 86 yards. I want to see for I'm back on the Utah State side. They see like how high. Well, actually, let me rephrase this. Where are they in your power rankings this week? We put our poll up. It's been published. Where did you do you recall where you put the Aggies?
I don't have it in front of me. I'm pretty sure I put the Aggies at four,
Behind boy the three.
behind Boise, San Diego State, and Fresno State.
Okay, I did the same thing. I they actually ended up being fifth in our poll because. Two people put Hawaii number one. Not
Well,
judging,
all right.
just saying. Not judging, but just saying. I got my eye on you, whoever that is. We so whatever. It's very close. So there's that's where I put them as well, right behind those three teams. And it'll be hard for me to get them past them until they actually play like Boise State later this year, which is the final week of the year. But I've been very impressed with Utah State because I said, show me a running game. They've been running the ball well. Their defense is improving quite a bit because they made some good stops versus Michigan State. They shut down, which is not hard, New Mexico State offense. Excuse me, offense. He's replaced everybody. But I'm wondering, do you remember this game last year, Matt? How crazy it was?
I do. I mean, you could have said the same thing about Utah State going into this game last year.
Yeah. Possible. This game last year was like, well, they scored like 28 points in the fourth quarter, something nuts. Where I remember the turnover, strip sack for a touchdown. It came down to the final moments of this game. It was like, oh, Utah State's done. No, they're bat not. There's a huge pass by Jordan Love, who, by the way, Jordan Love, I need to do my quarterback rankings. I think I'm going to do it now this week. He might be like top three quarterback in the conference
He might be, yeah.
because who do you got for so far? Brett Rippin's played pretty well. Would you put McMarion up there, even if you count his rushing statistics from the past couple weeks, or at least last
I
week?
mean, if it were me, I think the conversation consists of
Cole
Ruben,
McDonald.
McDonald, McMarion, Love, and Cardiff Samuels.
Yeah.
Maybe Armonee Rodgers.
Let's wait till Arkansas State on that one. At least I
Yeah.
will. So it's he's up there, which is a good thing because this league has always had a ton of great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Going back, like David Fells, Derek Carr, there's always guys out there. Sorry to bring up those two names, but that's what I thought of right away. But last year it was 38-35 Air Force. I want to see Utah State run the ball and run the ball well because that's what they have never done, and until like this year, until they had like even like I said, I always mentioned it, Devontae Mays. He's with the Packers now, or I think he's still in the Packers, right? He got drafted by the Packers.
I'm pretty sure he's still there, yeah.
Okay, I guess they're carrying four running backs with Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and Ty Montgomery. Wouldn't surprise me. But I want to see him do it against an FBS team, a really good one. Oh, and maybe not a really good one, but better than New Mexico State. And
Well, I mean, I'm gonna remind you again that they were middle of the pack last year as far as yards per carry.
I still didn't like what I saw running the ball. I'll use my eye test watching the game, Matt. It's okay. I will say I was not impressed. That's what I'm saying. They had that. I want something more consistent because remember last year, oh, it's El Toro Allen. Oh, it's Lawan Hunt. It was never the guy we thought it would be. And maybe that's what I'm looking for. Give me consistency with one guy.
I mean, I'm looking for the opposite if I'm a Utah State fan. This is Jordan Love's game to lose. Because if you watched that game a couple weeks ago against Florida Atlantic, you saw the Air Force secondary get picked apart.
Yeah, that's true as well.
And they haven't really shown much of an ability to put pressure on a passer so far. They only have, I think, 3 sacks as a team. And, you know, Chris Robeson, the Florida Atlantic quarterback, I think he only missed 2 or 3 passes in the entire first half. He was just mowing them down. And, you know, I don't know that there's any one guy in particular who they were picking upon. They were just being able to, you know, spread the field. And even though they shut down Devin Singletary 2 weeks ago, it didn't really matter because they were moving the ball so well through the air. So if I'm Jordan Love and I'm, I don't know, pretty much everybody on this Utah State receiving corps, I'm kind of licking my chops at the opportunity to go out there and make big plays.
No, that's a space dummy of the week. Where what was he, 22, 25 in the first half?
It was something like that, yeah.
So no, that's probably going to happen. I don't know. Maybe I just want to see the running game be for real. They may not need it, but it's a. So is this line? What's it? 10.5 right now? 11.
Let's see.
10.5 at the moment.
Yes.
Is that not enough for you? It sounds like you would like it to be bigger.
I mean, if it were me, I think it should be bigger.
Like what? 2 touchdowns.
Maybe, yeah.
Ooh, you think so? You is it so? Is it because Air Force is not as good, or is he like Utah State that much?
I just haven't seen enough from Air Force offensively, actually from both sides of the ball, to really be confident in their ability to keep up with Utah State. Because the other thing that Utah State has going for them so far that was, you know, hit or miss last year, is they've been really disruptive as well, especially in that front seven and especially their linebackers. You know, we haven't maybe talked enough about Tipa Galeai, who now has 6 tackles for loss on the year, 3.5 sacks. You know, they have multiple guys with at least 3 tackles for loss, which is kind of rare, at least in the Mountain West so far. And they've got, you know, pretty much everybody on the defense has at least 1 tackle for loss. So they've been racking up the havoc rate, and it hasn't really been just because of 1 or 2 guys. And when you're thinking about, you know, an Air Force ground game that it hasn't been quite as efficient as they were in years past.
Nope.
Did you happen to see that article at SB Nation about the rule change that happened last year and trying to figure out exactly what's happened to triple option teams because of it?
I was listening to the Solid Verbal the other day and they mentioned something about it, but I didn't realize the change. What exactly is that?
So they, all blocks below the waist now have to come within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and all blocks below the waist now have to come to the front, or come from the front, excuse me, unless they're by offensive linemen while the ball is still inside the tackle box. So they had Army as an example, and what they noted was that they've been called for 7 illegal blocks in the first 3 games, whereas last year in the entire season they only had 4. And so that is the kind of thing that directly affects Air Force as well. And when you look at what they've done on a per play basis, you know, their numbers are down from where they were a year or two ago. And, you know, especially for a team that thrives on staying on schedule on early downs, you know, the fact that they're only averaging 4.1 yards per carry on first, or excuse me, what was I looking at before? I'm trying to remember. you know, what I think it was when I was, what one of the things I wrote about was the fact that they've been good about, you know, finishing opportunities when they had them. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, you know, having enough of those opportunities, because their production on the opposite side of the field has gone way down. You know, when they're between the 40s, they're averaging 5.7 yards per carry. But once they get past the 40, that number drops to 4.1. And when you compare that to where that was a year or two ago, they just aren't getting enough push relative to what they were before. And I don't know if that has to do with that rule change or anything like that. I don't know if it just has to come down to, you know, stiffer defenses that they faced. But that's one of those things where if they can't turn it around and they have to settle for field goals, that could turn into a long afternoon, long evening real quick.
So I'm reading that. Yeah, I'm reading the rule thing. So it's basically you can't cut block because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's restricting where in the field you can do it. So were teams really cut blocking 5 yards down the down the field?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like they're doing that often. But I guess now the way it really hurts teams is that because we've seen these teams, if you're doing the – because typically the option, it's unless you're in a fullback dive or you do the fake dive, step back, and then go forward the quarterback, like where you could, it's always the option. You know what I'm talking about, those type of plays.
Yeah, yeah.
So this seems to be what hurt teams that go wide more often than not. Because if you're outside the tackle box, you want to spread everybody out. You want to make a defender come to the quarterback, pick a guy, pick the pitchman, are you going to get the one, sometimes two running backs who are there to get the ball. So if you go super wide, it's not even super wide, just the tackle box is not very far. That's considered tackle to tackle.
Yeah.
How are you going to, I don't know, it's interesting. I wonder why they did that. I assume it's a player safety thing.
Probably, yeah.
But I had to look at it more closely. I knew there was something about a rule change. I didn't look into it that closely until I heard about it the other day. So, and below the waist, not even from, it's always been legal to block from behind to cut guys who aren't looking. Mm-hmm. That's pretty illegal. Okay, I'm just kind of thinking about this out loud. So that's, apparently so far it seems to have an impact, I guess, right? I'd have to look more closely because I'm just spouting off reading and thinking out loud. So, but if that's the case, but let me ask you this. Let's move on to something more concrete, not me jabbering. Who's the quarterback for Air Force? I'm looking around. Depth chart says Orr. I'm looking at kind of what they've been doing over at the Colorado Springs Gazette. Is it going to be Sanders again this week? Because he got to start last week versus Florida Atlantic, or 2 weeks ago.
I guess I wouldn't be surprised by either one. I think the reason I'm inclined to think it's going to be Sanders is because when they were trying to rally, he was just better throwing the football than Arian Werthmann was in the opener against Stony Brook. He was 8 of 13 for 164 yards and a touchdown. And they need that big playability, or at least if this game unfolds the way that I think it will, they're going to need that big playability.
Well, and also last year he got to start in nearly versus Utah State. He played extremely well, so maybe there's that. One thing, too, to note, which is Air Force is doing the bye week, because Utah State, we see them going more plays, quicker, a little more up-tempo. Which makes sense. That's all they've been doing all week.
Yeah.
So that may or may not work. It's can't hurt it, clearly. Because here's the thing, too. Like, really quick. In three games, Matt Wells has had touchdown runs of 68. Or not him, but the team, obviously. Six huge plays. So I don't know where I'm going here. This isn't worded properly. I should read stuff before I talk sometimes. Because I'm reading through what they wrote out there. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense at all. All I know, they're going fast, and I don't know. It's you're convincing me to pick Utah State big and change my pick a little bit here, Matt.
Well, why don't you – you know, I'm not going to say anything else until you make your pick. I'm going to make you go first.
All right. My original pick this morning, Utah State to win by Air Force cover because – Air Force typically plays well, but I didn't research well enough the rule change, which has been impacting triple option teams. The line is, let me look at the over-under really quick as I'm stalling here. It's what, 60 points? I'm going to go 40 to 20 Utah State.
All right.
What do you got?
So then you don't have them covering.
I know, I'm changing right now. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I said, yeah, because you convinced me a few reasons why to take Utah State big.
Yeah, I don't think this is just a good matchup for Air Force. And I do kind of expect the Aggies to go out there and win big. I'm going to say 41-17.
41-17. For Air Force to win the game, they just need to have the running attack going on full cylinder.
They basically just need to keep the offense off the field, which is kind of what they did in last year's matchup. Like, they were outgained on offense, but because they held the ball for so long and made the most of their opportunities, they got away with one. I just don't see that happening again.
Well, and they got that strip sack for a touchdown, too, late in the game. So I think Utah State, we should have listened more closely to Aggie people out there. They're going to challenge for this Mountain Division.
They're looking really good through 3 weeks. I kind of expect them to look good again.
And where would you put this opponent? Would this be their number two opponent they faced all year? Better than New Mexico State?
Yeah, I think they are.
Okay, just making sure. All right, final game of the weekend. It's
No, there's two more.
Oh, I thought Hawaii game was next.
No, we got Eastern Michigan at San Diego State.
Sorry, Aztec fans. They're going to hate me again now. Dang it.
7:30 Pacific, 8:30 Mountain Time on CBS Sports Network.
Home of Aztec football.
Word.
If it's a night game and it's at home, it's at Qualcomm.
I don't think anybody's complaining. Interestingly enough, the line has moved quite a bit for this game.
It's currently 12. What was it previously?
It opened at 9.5.
Huh. Wonder why.
And apparently, according to the betting trends, a lot of people are still putting money on Eastern Michigan.
No, that'd be so another
that,
one. That's
that,
it. That's
that
it.
Number might go up more.
Well, that's the other way around. They're putting money on Aztecs.
Oh, I might be looking at the wrong one.
Well, no, you're right.
Because it says the spread is 77% on Eastern Michigan right now.
No, that means people are betting them to cover the spread.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So the number might go up even more. Right?
Oh, no, what it means, like, so if it's plus 12 for Eastern Michigan, if it's at 9.5 right now, which when it started, and it goes to San Diego State higher, that means more people are picking the Aztecs to win by more than that spread. Like, enough money's coming off for them to cover, they want to increase that to encourage betting on the Eastern Michigan side, which hasn't seemed to work.
Oh, okay.
That's it actually opened at 8.5, not even 9.5, opened at 8.5.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's how that works. When you look at the percentage stuff like this, over at I'm looking at the Pick Center for ESPN, the spread consensus pick, 54% favor of Eastern Michigan covering the spread. I would expect, if it's this point, I would probably pick Eastern Michigan to cover the spread. Because what did I put in our post? Maybe mine's down. I have I already locked in 10.5. Should I go with that, or should we change to 12?
No. We stick with what we put in there.
I put that in this morning. It was 10.5 this morning, folks.
Okay.
It's changed within like 2 hours, so I guess we'll go 10.5, which, okay, I can't get too caught up in this. All right, so let me talk to you about this game, Matt. Ryan Agnew, is he finally a quarterback that showed up for once?
Yes and no.
He played better than I thought he did because, heck, he beat Arizona State. I don't care what the last play was. It was still a close game. And who knows? That game would have gone to overtime possibly. Or no, they would have. Yeah, it could have gone to overtime. Who knows what would have happened? Arizona State was not guaranteed a victory even if that catch was caught.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Eastern Michigan's, you know, I don't know if they're going to challenge seriously for the MAC title or anything this year, but they might be like sneaky decent on both sides of the ball. And so this isn't the kind of opposition that the Aztecs can't overlook. And to me, what stands out on the Eagles' offense relative to everything else that they've faced so far is the fact that they're running two quarterbacks, and both of them have played pretty well so far.
Yeah.
You know, Tyler Wiegers and Mike Klass have combined, I think, for 7 or 8 touchdowns against 1 interception.
Seven.
And so, you know, I think you start there, and they've mostly been pretty efficient. Like, Wiegers in particular is completing over 3/4 of his passes so far. And while maybe their sack rate is a little higher than you would want it to be if you're an Eastern Michigan fan, you know, both of those guys have a sack rate north of 10%. So if I'm an Aztecs fan, I'm thinking that's good news for the pass rush, which at least in 1 week without Noble Hall did pretty well for itself. Mm-hmm. But I think it's ultimately going to come down to how well they can contain that passing game, because, you know, obviously we all remember the Stanford game, but they did do a pretty decent job against N'Keal Harry in Arizona State last week. So I think there's some steps in the right direction, but the secondary is going to have to play up in order to keep Eastern Michigan at bay.
Yeah, because you see they have 3 touchdown passes of 75 yards or more.
Mm-hmm.
They also, one thing to note too, Glass also runs pretty well, 106 yards on the ground and a couple touchdowns.
That's true.
So while he is not super accurate, just under 60%, he still has no picks, the most touchdowns on the team for passing, and also leads the team rushing with 2. And that could come with the pass rush, like you said, the sack rate where he has to run around and get open. But, heck, he has 100 yards in for QB through a couple games. That's not bad. And, heck, they beat Purdue. They nearly beat Buffalo, who's currently at 3-0. So Eastern Michigan, this is not the Eastern Michigan of 6 years ago.
That is true.
This is the Eastern Michigan team that's pretty good, probably should make a bowl game, I'm thinking. But they're
definitely going to be in the mix.
Yeah, they should be in there. But I guess the biggest thing is this, like you said, secondary. If they can get to the quarterback, great. Sack him, knock the ball down. But they can't get beat deep because they want to go deep. They have guys like everybody on their team It's like they have all these guys 15 yards or more per catch. They have all these deep passes. Like they have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least, I'll look more specifically, but at least 8 passes of 20 plus more yards completed. Mm-hmm. They move the ball downfield, and they Aztecs need to either tighten up the secondary or get a pass rush. One or the other. Both preferably, obviously, but one or the other would be nice.
I have a feeling it's going to be a really big game for someone like Chibu Onyeukwu.
What's he going to do, you think?
I mean, I think that given the fact that Eastern Michigan has struggled a bit with protecting the passer, even despite their big play capabilities, I just kind of think that this is going to be a really favorable matchup for that defensive line. And Onyeukwu, at least through the first couple of games, you know, he does have 1.5 sacks, which is second on the team behind Kaiba Tizino, who, by the way, he might be another guy that's in line for a big game. But I just think that when you look at the Eastern Michigan line, one thing that jumps out is they are starting a freshman at left tackle. And he's been the starter since day one, Sidi Sow. He's a big dude, 6'5", 335 pounds. But I do think that this defense, the 3-3-5, could give him some trouble. And so if they put pressure on that side of the line, I wouldn't be surprised if it ultimately collapsed.
Interesting. Freshman playing out there against what Rocky Long, what they like to do defensively, that could spell trouble. Also, back to the quarterback really quick. Eastern Michigan, as a team, they're 10th of the country, over 10 yards per attempt.
It's pretty good.
So that's just behind Hawaii. Army is skewed because they're up there as well, just because. But like you have Toledo, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Alabama. They're top 10 team in 10 yards per attempt, which is solid. And then also, isn't it Juwan Washington banged up a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Last I heard, he was dealing with a turf toe issue. Okay. So this might ultimately be a big moment for someone like Chase Jasmine.
He
stepped up, answered the bell last week, went over 100 yards. And honestly, another thing that wouldn't surprise me is if he went over 100 yards again. Because, you know, Eastern Michigan does have some playmakers in their front seven. One guy to keep an eye on who's been a little bit quiet so far this year is Max Crosby. He only has a tackle and a half for loss, but I think, if I remember correctly, he was one of their, if not their only, all-MAC defensive selection. So he's a guy they're going to have to account for. But, I mean, if you're like me and you saw that that 10-second clip that Jeff Schwartz was breaking down the other day on Twitter, where Ryan Pope and Tyler Romer were just treating Arizona State defenders like ragdolls. You know, you might say, yeah, Eastern Michigan's got talent in the front seven, but I think we got this.
Yeah, I think, yeah. San Diego State, they know what they're doing back there. So let's go back to Ryan Agnew real quick. Do you think he's going to have a – because I said, like, I remember – I'm rambling here, but remember they had to bring the punter on a couple springs ago when Chapman going to play to actually be a guy to throw the ball? Is it safe to say – because I see our buddy Ted and other guys, I'm part of some, like, San Diego State group for some reason on Facebook, so they chat about stuff. Like, they're obviously pro Aztecs for what group it is, so we share some of our stuff over there time to time. He's better than I thought he would be. But then again, remember, he also was only 12 of 24.
True. I think it all depends on how you look at it, because at least you didn't turn the ball over.
There's that. And it's like all he needs to do, like, I don't want to put expectations low, but if he does what Chapman does, who does great jobs, and he had a drive or two in the game where he moved the ball down the field. Again, he did. It's two things. This offense isn't going to have any quarterback go throw 30-plus times. There's something wrong if that's the case. First of all, because they want to run the ball with whoever, it's Washington or Jasmine or whoever back there taking the ball and running for 100-plus yards each. He would, for me, for what I want to see him to do, is basically do what he did 2 weeks ago but have no interceptions versus Sac State. Like, if he goes 11 or 17 for 160 and a touchdown, that's fine.
Well, here's another thing to keep in mind, too. Is that he also contributes a little more with his legs than Chapman did too. And if, after you adjust for sacks, you know, he's only had 11 carries in the first couple of games, but he's averaging about 5.8 yards per carry, which is not nothing. And it gives defenses something else to think about besides just Washington and Jasmine out of the backfield.
It's not nothing. It's half a first down every time he runs the ball, 5 yards. Yeah. So that's something to Chapman. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but he was not a guy to run.
He is not.
And this doesn't mean Agnew's going to take off and run. He does have at least 2 over 10 yards this year so far. So, but if he gets 4 yards here, 8 yards here, say he gets, like last week he had 9 rushes for 36 before sack adjustment. So if he just gets, give me 25 yards from him on the ground, that's a pretty good deal. Give me, like, here's what I'd like to see. Give me 200 total yards, like maybe 175 and 25.
I really don't think they're going to ask him to do that much, though.
Well, I'm just saying, throwing for 175, why is that? That doesn't seem too... Well, I guess that'd be a season high, but I don't know, 170 and 30? I just think he... Maybe you're right, but he'll probably throw, 15 times? I'm guessing 15 to 20, which is typical. What do you want him to go, like 12 of 20? 9 of 15, 9 of 14, something like that?
Honestly, I just want him to not turn the ball over.
Okay, that's fair. Just give the ball to the running back.
Here's one of the most telling things, and I think that teamrankings.com accounts for FCS competition for some reason. But
thorough. That's what they are, the thorough.
Yeah, but when you look at the run-pass ratio of every FBS team so far this year, the only team that's thrown less than San Diego State so far in the conference is Air Force. They've only thrown it 32.4% of the time. 32.14, excuse me. So, no, they're not going to let Agnew throw it 25 times if they can help it. They're going to give Jasmine and Washington, I would say, somewhere between 40 and 50 carries if they can handle it.
What did they have last week? They combined for 40, right? Just about?
I don't have that number in front of me.
I remember we were joking about 30. He didn't have quite 30, but... They're going to run mid. That shouldn't be out of the.
On the year, they have 114 carries between them.
Yeah, that's. It probably should throw more than that percentage a little bit.
But I don't think they will, though.
They won't, but I think getting to 38% would be good. They actually had 27 and 19 last week, so what's that? 38? Mm-hmm. 36, excuse me. So, or no, 46. Jeez, my math is terrible again. So you're right. They'll probably 40 to 50 times, especially if Washington's banged up a little bit. Maybe Jasmine will. The split will be closer, more 50-50. But do you – like Eastern Michigan, they're not terrible, but there's a reason the Aztecs are almost a 2-touchdown favorite.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think ultimately San Diego State's going to play their game, and I think it's going to work out for them. It's probably not going to be terribly exciting to watch unless you're a fan of ground and pound. So I don't know if we're moving to predictions yet or not.
Let's go for it. Why not? Because – they've improved in Stanford. Sac State was terrible. I'll say this. I want it to be a more consistent game because the two picks, obviously Agnew, I don't want to see that again. If he gets one pick, that's not the end of the world. It's better than two for Sac State. He's actually had a – here's the thing, too, we should consider. He came in mid-game for Sac State, which is not jarring, but it's like, oh, crap, I'm playing. And it's just you're not prepared the same as you are a starter. He knows he's a starter last week versus Arizona State. Did okay, no picks. Had the 30-plus yards, 50% completion. He has another full week against a team that's not as good as Arizona State. So I'd expect him to be gradually get better. Not that they're going to give him more to do, but he's going to be better than 50%. And so I think he should have a better game than last week, whether it's just completing 60% of his passes, maybe another touchdown or something. But that's what I want to see from him. And I'm going to go – if we're going at 10.5, I'm going to go Aztecs to cover both. Even if it's 12, I'd probably do the same thing.
So what's your final score?
Oh, score. Score, too. I need a score as well. I think it'll be – I think Eastern Michigan can get a few points on here because they have the deep threat. I think that's always a possibility. I'm going to go – because the over-under is only 15.5, which is pretty low. I'm going to say it's going to be like 28-17. Which barely gets me past that 10.5 from our initial picks this morning.
Yeah, I think personally I would take Eastern Michigan to cover.
At 10.5?
At 10.5.
Okay.
But I would take the Aztecs to win. I'm going to say 24-17.
Okay. All right, now it's the final game. Am I correct on this? Is this the last one?
That is correct.
Duquesne travels to Hawaii, FCS team, going out to the island. It's a late kick. It's, 9 o'clock Pacific? Streaming on Watch Stadium if you're in the States. I guess you can't put on your TV, but I'm wondering if you can bypass if you have a Chromecast and maybe instead of doing the Chromecast itself to like cast your screen.
I have no idea.
I need to try that because I know when they try to disable stuff, you can still do. Do you ever use Chromecast or anything like that, Matt?
Oh yeah.
So you know, you have the little button in the corner to cast it to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, but sometimes that's disabled, like this probably would be. But if you can actually cast your screen, like put your phone on there and look at any page, say internet, text messages, whatever,
mm-hmm.
maybe just cast your screen. So just a little workaround if you want to actually watch it on the TV. So there's that. And Hawaii is 3-1. And you chatted with, really quick, a guy from Duquesne. What were like his thoughts on, or what were your questions you wanted answered?
Well, be on the lookout for that tomorrow, which is Friday, depending on when you're listening to this.
It's out, yeah, Friday. I was going to say something else, but no, check Friday.
But yeah, I mean, Duquesne's kind of an interesting team because they've played pretty well so far this year. And yeah, you could say it's an FCS team, rather. But they did have close wins against Valparaiso and Dayton in the last couple of weeks. And they do have some playmakers on their offense that Hawaii's going to have to account for. You know, for me, the one guy that stood out is Nahari Crawford. And if you haven't read the preview with Parker Hurley of Pittsburgh Sports Now, I believe he's actually a contributor at Steelers Wire, if I'm not mistaken, one of our other USA Today blogs. Go check that out if you want. But Crawford's a guy with big playability, and he's kind of a shifty guy, kind of a small guy. The one player that he compared him to was Christian Kirk, who was formerly of Texas A&M. Now he's with the Arizona Cardinals, a guy they can move around, create matchups with, and at least within the first four games, you know, he's averaging over 18 yards a catch and he has 5 touchdowns. Yeah, so that is something that Hawaii is going to have to account for. And they do have a quarterback in Daniel Parr, who you may recall did start for a little while last year for Florida Atlantic. He transferred. He's at Duquesne now. He's completing about 2/3 of his passes. He has 6 touchdowns against 5 interceptions. And it seemed like the big key is the health of A.J. Hines, their leading rusher so far. Because he's averaging about 5.5 yards per carry. He, too, has 5 touchdowns. But I guess his status is kind of up in the air for the moment because he did get banged up a little bit last week against Dayton. So that's something to keep an eye on, especially when you consider that Hawaii's been a little bit uneven as far as just avoiding big plays.
So, okay, that's good to know. They got, but still, saying Christian Kirk, that's pretty high praise. He has a high draft pick, too. So
yeah, he's seemed pretty good.
Just saying. So It could be
by the way, Crawford, I believe, if I remember correctly, he led the FCS in touchdowns last year.
Okay, so it's not a slouch.
No, he's not a slouch.
And from what we see in this Hawaii defense, be ready because teams can throw the ball against them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing for Hawaii is that Duquesne's defense is, you know, it's okay. If you're a Boise State fan, for instance, you might remember the name Reed Harrison Ducross.
Mm-hmm.
He is a part of the Duquesne secondary now. And yeah, Hurley did talk very highly of their trio of cornerbacks they have. Harrison Ducross, Jonathan Estash, and I'm trying to remember the last guy's name. Like it's escaping me right now. Brandon Standback, I think, was the other guy. But all three of those guys are going to play a role. But I would say that based on what we've seen so far from the Hawaii offense, they're going to have their hands full with John Ursua and Cedric Bird and company. So I'm expecting Hawaii to be able to move the ball. I'm expecting them to create big plays the same way that we've seen them in the first month. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Duquesne is able to keep up at least for a little while.
I would think so, because like I said, this is what the passing teams have done against the Warrior defense.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Let me give you a quick Twitter update. We did pass 2,200 in the past half hour.
High five.
So high five to, should we list off some Twitter followers here who gave us a follow here?
No, we're just giving a high five to everybody.
That's fine. Okay. No big deal. I won't give him credit. Remember that. Matt does not want to give you credit on the podcast.
I'm going to send a thank you to everybody.
I'm kidding. We're sitting in hour 10 and we had like 6 games. So I just happened to see that. I'm like, oh, that's cool. All right. So, yes, what I was saying, the Hawaii defense better be ready because look at the passing attack through the first couple weeks of the year. They've been giving up way too many points and yards in the air. And that's going to be a concern where you're right, where Duquesne could stick around for part of the game. But I'm expecting a Utah State type blowout in this game. I'm going to say it. Like Tennessee Tech type game.
Okay. All right. What's your score?
I'm going to go 60-21.
Ooh, wow. I don't know if I'm going to be quite so bold, but I am expecting another pretty big win for Hawaii. I'm going to say 40, 48 to 20.
Okay.
That sounds about right.
That does. And what I'm getting at is like it's a slow burn. It's like 14, you're up 14-7, 28, you know what I mean? Something like that where it's
Yeah.
not that it's close, but it's like a consistent, we're just going to score 20, 14 points a quarter and you can't stop us. All right. Anything else you need to add this week? That's it for the games. We've gone a good, you're welcome, 70 minutes on a podcast with half the amount of teams we normally do. So
I think we're pretty much good to go.
we are good to go. So again, check us out on MWWire.com. Facebook, Mountain West Wire, Twitter, MWC Wire. I'm currently retweeting the Nevada basketball schedule because a lot of games are announced on ESPN. So that's what our Twitter feed at the moment is being filled up with. So you're welcome for that too, I guess.
And be on the lookout very soon for our basketball top 25 if that's your jam.
Oh, that's right. I guess a little housekeeping. We'll start that. I'm not sure when. I submitted mine the other day. We're going to record our first basketball podcast, I believe, Sunday night. But we're going to release, I think, 2 weeks starting the first week of October. And it's Utah State is the first one. Then I believe Colorado State, I believe, is number two. So
Very cool.
get those questions in. And again, subscribe, tune in, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, iTunes. Basically, wherever fine podcasts are sold, get ours for free because we're always free on the podcast. So thank you
Fine
for.
and unfine alike.
Exactly. All right. So we'll guess we'll see you guys this Sunday night. And have a good weekend, folks.